You are now listening to an Unwrapped Sports Network podcast.
Unwrapped family, how you guys doing? Welcome to NBA Unwrapped. This is Perry Aston, joined by Corbin Weinerman. What's going on, buddy?
Excited as always to do this.
We got a special guest, Oliver Maroney. I'm going to talk him up in a bit, but before we do, wanted to remind you guys to listen to us on Anchor, the Apple Podcast app, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Pocket Casts, and Radio Public. Quite a mouthful now. We're very proud to be on all those different platforms, so make sure to go look up NBA Unwrapped pretty much anywhere that you listen to podcasts now. Follow us on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow me on Twitter at Perry Aston, Corbin at Corbin Unwrapped, and our special guest Oliver at O Maroney NBA. Of course, our website as well at unwrappedsports.com. Find all of our partner podcasts on there, all of our articles, everything that we got going on, so make sure to check out the website and sign up for our newsletter when you're there, the little orange box, first name, last name, and email. You're going to get the best content sent to you on a weekly basis. We're super proud of that. And thank you to all of our contributors and everyone in the Unwrapped family for the work that you put in and all the support that all of our fans have given. And thank you so much to our sponsors for this episode at Yamble Sports and Sportscaster live streaming app, Yamble Sports, a live predictions app. Ecstatic to talk to Oliver today about everything going on around the Big Three and the NBA. Pretty much does everything Big Three. In fact, Ice Cube actually called him the Woj of the Big Three. Any of my NBA fans out there are going to know exactly who Woj is. He's practically the god of NBA when it comes to any kind of breaking news. So if he's saying that about Oliver, you know exactly the kind of person we have here. Formerly Dimag and Basketball Insiders, ballislife.com. Oliver, tell our fans just a little bit about what you do and some things that are coming up in the near future.
It's been a crazy summer, obviously. The Big Three is in full force right now. See, the summertime has a lot of travel, a lot of flying. But I manage basically the PR credentialing, interview setups, and everything. I do break some news every once in a while. I throw out my opinions and thoughts on certain things. I'm always talking with agents and other players. I have a lot of friends that are in the Big Three and players that are in the Big Three that I know very well. And so, yeah, I just try and do as much as I possibly can for the league. I love it. My extended family, as I like to call it, the people that are involved are there for a reason. We all want it to be successful, and Cube's given us the roadmap. He's one of the hardest working individuals that I've ever met. It's inspiring to be a part of it. I'm proud, very grateful. Obviously, I host my own podcast on Ball is Life, and I do that typically once a week. It's been a little off and on just because of Big Three season and travel and everything else, but I try and do that as much as I can. And it's called Positionless. It's a one-on-one interview setting. So I take a guest, we walk through his story and what's important to him, what's important to her, and why they do what they do. Those are kind of the things that I've been dabbling in, I guess you could say, all summer long and throughout the past season or so. I used to be a feature writer, so I still have a passion for that, and there's some stories that I have been working on for quite some time that will be out in the near future. I'm looking forward to dropping those, but that's been my summer and kind of what I've been doing.
Awesome. Sounds like you've definitely got a full workload in front of you. I had a question, Oliver, just about how you got to be a part of the Big Three and such a big name in the Big Three. Was it the relationships that you had built with players in the Big Three back when they were in the NBA, or how did that come about?
Yeah, it's a great question. I was doing some feature writing, and I was at Up Rocks and Dime Magazine when the Big Three was announced. About a few weeks before they announced it, they reached out. Cube's team reached out. Some of the people reached out from the then PR firm that they were using. You know, just shot me basically a press release of what it would look like and what the idea was, the players that were signing up. And I was totally bought into the idea. We worked on doing an interview with Ice Cube, Jeff Kwatt, that's the other co-founder. Basically spent, you know, what was supposed to be 10 or 15 minutes on the phone to like an hour on the phone with Cube, and then another 45 minutes to an hour with Jeff.
That's awesome. The concept,
the idea. Really, it was just about how the league formed. And at the end of this interview, Cube started asking me questions. Like, what do you think about this? What do you think about the rule here? Very smart questions. Gave him my opinion on them. About, I'd say, 3 or 4 weeks later, dialogue started between me and kind of the Big Three and their marketing team about bringing me on in some capacity. And over time, it evolved from podcast hosting for their Big Three show to writing content on their site to shooting videos for their YouTube and for Fox and so forth. Season one, I was grateful to be able to work with guys like Gary Payton, Allen Iverson, set up sit-down interviews. And actually, Corey McGinnity was injured, MVP. We brought him in as the interviewer. and would have him interview guys that were in the league. So Gary Payton, Allen Iverson, and they did sit down interviews about the league, what it was about, and their careers. It worked out pretty well, and over time, my role has just continued to evolve with the Big Three. And in season three, I've been brought on really as a PR person, but I do everything. I try and handle a little bit of the social media side, get guys tickets, getting like Boogie Cousins in Chicago, or taking care of guys like that and making sure they get where they need to be and stuff like that. I do pretty much everything. There isn't a job that I don't necessarily do, and I wouldn't call myself a specialist in any one category, but ultimately, I think all of us here at the Big Three, we help each other out whenever we possibly can, and we work as hard as we possibly can to get things done in the best possible fashion. So I think that's what's beautiful about it, is there's all these roles and you have this title, but really the title isn't what you are. You know, we all do everything for each other.
That's awesome. Seriously.
And the fact that he refers to Ice Cube.
Cube. Yeah, we took the ice off. That's pretty baller, man. Yeah, you just got to Cube level. That's pretty personable if you ask me. So that's pretty cool. And the fact that, of course, your 15-minute conversation turned into an hour, I can only imagine how his mannerisms are, how Ice Cube handles business, just because you can see him with his acting, with his music. He's just such a funny, pretty badass guy, to be 100% honest. And I know with business, from any report I've ever read about Ice Cube in regards to the Big Three or anything with his business ventures, it's been about how intelligent he is, how smart, how ahead of the curve that he is. So the fact that you know him on a personal level is real cool. I'm just going to ask you a little bit about Ice Cube. Is there anything that surprised you from what you expected when you initially conversed with him?
Yeah, I mean, set up this phone interview, and I wasn't sure what was going to take place. They're just like, shoot me your phone number, and we'll get in contact, and blah, 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 and we set up a time and a day, and I didn't have his phone number, so I'm like, what's going to happen here? Should I email them? So I emailed them like 10 minutes before the phone interview. I'm like, hey, is there a phone number, you know, like a dial-in? What are we doing here? And I didn't get a response, so I'm like sitting there waiting. I'm like, okay, well, this is the time, so I'll see what happens. And I get this random phone number from California. So I pick it up. First thing he says, yo, it's Cube. And I'm just like, okay.
Yo, Cube, what up?
Right on time. Knew what was going on, knew who I was, knew what I was doing. The amount of knowledge that he has, Mike Rappaport, he's a good friend of mine, and we've gone back and forth. He called him the great, like Pac, Leonardo DiCaprio, great people, idols, people that being around, it's just something different. And he goes through this list, and Cube is on the list. What's different about them is they just make everybody around them better. They don't need to even say anything. They just command a room. Just unique and different about them over anybody else. And so Cube has that same thing. It's like, I told this story on Twitter yesterday, but I'll use this as an example. I mean, even Miami, I'm booking him for certain things and trying to get things set up, and his flight's delayed. He arrives at like 7 a.m. in Miami, and he's got this brunch panel thing that he's supposed to do at like 10 a.m., 10:30. I just didn't understand how he would do it. I'm sitting there like, there's no way. You know, he got in at 7 a.m., he didn't sleep. Sure enough, he found a way to make it happen. He didn't attend the brunch portion of it, but he got there for the entire panel, spent two and a half hours of his time, and then we went straight from there to, like, four different radio shows.
Wow.
Back to back. He just doesn't stop. We have practice that night. He's there for that, and after that, 3 a.m., a bunch of the Big Three staff members and some other people show up to a concert he's doing in Miami. It started at 2:45, I think, was the set. He ended around 3:15, I think.
That's insane.
Didn't get out of there until 3:40, 3:30. The next day, we had Big Three games. So he's at all the Big Three games. He's there pre-game. He's there. Like, the work that we do, yeah, it's hard work. We put in a lot of time and effort and energy, but CEOs around the globe, I don't know if there's many people out there that have that kind of work ethic instilled in them, even after they've made it. Just seeing that and seeing how much effort and energy he puts in makes me want to work harder.
Yeah, that's inspiring. Because with Ice Cube, you know what he's got going on. You're still doing his music career. Now he's got this. He's got so many other investments and business ventures that he's done. Like what you just said, when you see a person make it and they still grind that hard, it's inspiring. So I love hearing that. I'm just going to ask you, from season one that you were around to now, what are the biggest changes for the Big Three that's impressed you the most? Has the progress been a little faster than you expected? Is there anything that you're excited to see for the next season?
Season one, we had Trilogy, a good team, Kenya Martin, Rashad McCants, Al Harrington, they were a good team. Right. They went undefeated, and they kind of coasted throughout. Teams weren't practicing, teams weren't really taking it too serious. I mean, there were teams that were. Trilogy obviously was. There were certain teams that were, but the format just wasn't normal. So guys are kind of taking it easy, trying to do what they can. In game, obviously, there's more competition, but I think just out of the game, there wasn't as much that camaraderie piece. As time goes on, season two, it gets better. Power, Nancy Lieberman, they're coaching, they're scheming, they're sending off plays to one another in group texts all day long.
Right.
Visiting family members. It's just a whole different ballgame. And now season three, you have enemies in Gilbert Arenas. They work out in L.A. When they're not traveling, they are sending game tape to one another. And they're, like, in the middle of the pack right now. And the teams at the top, they're always practicing, always taking care of their bodies, always doing the right things, always in shape. It's just different. And in the offseason, they're working out. They're playing together. They're trying to figure out who they're going to pick up. I mean, I have conversations with guys all the time. They're like, okay, this summer, we're going to go after these three guys. We want him to join the league. We want him to join the league. And so the league's getting younger. It's getting more competitive. It's its own game now. And it wasn't. People thought it was a gimmick or a joke to begin with. There's certainly times where you can look at it and say, okay, it's got a four-point shot. It's entertainment at the end of the day. But there has been a lot more serious attitude and approach that I think people have taken to it. That's what makes it so much fun. You're watching these guys go out and compete again like the old days.
Right. It's the nostalgia factor that I think the Big Three really gets me, because there's players that you grew up watching that you wish still were playing, and this is their opportunity. You're bringing up Corey Maggette, all these guys. I'll never forget when I'm playing, a buddy of mine used to be the only Clippers fan I knew. It was during the Maggette and Elton Brand era with Sam Cassell. You know, that's the team that I remember because I grew up in LA. Corey Maggette was a guy that I enjoyed watching, to see him involved with this league. Allen Iverson, just a straight OG, couldn't be a better personality fit with Ice Cube.
I remember Corey Maggette for like 2 or 3 years back, from early 07 to 09. He had the highest points per shot of any player in the NBA. It was just a weird stat. Shows the efficiency, but just something I remember from back then. So yeah, he used to be a really good basketball
player. I mean, what's
player.
Great now, it's you got guys that aren't even really trying to come back for entertainment. You guys competing like Joe Johnson that still have so much left in the tank. It's almost unfair that they're in the Big Three, and that's a name I wanted to bring up to you because I think he has been a big reason why there's been a lot more media attention on the Big Three this season and all of those game winners. And you saw about last week, it was that 4-point game winner that pretty much clinched their spot in the Big Three playoffs. For him to bring that much energy, that much skill, how has that impacted the Big Three? And has there been other players that have been just as impactful as a guy like Joe Johnson right now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've had conversations with multiple NBA executives about Joe Johnson and potentially bringing him in for, like, informal workouts.
Okay.
I haven't mentioned that to anybody. I'm not breaking news here, but I don't really throw that stuff out. But, it's been a topic of conversation. And I think, in terms of unfair, no. Cube wants this to be as competitive as possible. He wants the best players possible. I think you saw that with guys like Allen Iverson and Lamar Odom. And I'm not pointing out to say that they're bad players. They're not. But I don't think that they were necessarily ready. Not to say that it's a bad thing, but I think the league quickly recognized that, moved on from those guys, and mutually parted ways to fill the void with guys that were going to make this more competitive and a better league. So I think a guy like Joe Johnson brings not only that vet experience, understanding, but isolation-wise, you know, he's probably one of the best 3-on-3 basketball players in the world.
Yeah, ISO Joe. ISO Joe is his name.
Absolutely. Even guys, put him up against some of the NBA guys one-on-one. I don't know if there's too many guys that I pick over a guy like him, just isolation one-on-one. He's still in shape. He still has the NBA body. He's still ready to go. He just may not be able to do 82 games up and down completely. And that's fine. But I certainly wouldn't be shocked to see him in the NBA next season in some way, shape, or form. But if he is going to be in the NBA, I would assume that it would be like a February kind of deal when a team suffers an injury that's a championship contender and they kind of bring him in for the last portions of the season. But really, I think it always enhances the league when you can get guys like Joe Johnson here and they're playing as well as they are. But there's other guys, I mean, guys that really haven't been talked about a lot in the national perspective. Andre Emmett, he's an interesting player, definitely can bring a lot to the table. Very quirky. see, and like just different in the way that he plays the game. His size isn't necessarily one for a guard position, but not necessarily a forward either. So I think positioning in a 5-on-5 game, you kind of have question marks surrounding him. But in terms of his game, I mean, he's flat out can play. I mean, he would be a good rotation player in the NBA. Same with David Hawkins, another guy that can shoot the ball, can create, can play defense. Both those guys, the stature there is a little interesting. Huskier, I guess you could say. They're built, but they still have a lot of game, and they're still in shape, young, could still be on an NBA roster today. So there's a few guys out there. Those are names that people don't really talk about very often, but Joe Johnson certainly on the top of that list. Amari Stoudemire played great last week. Nate Robinson, I mean, yeah. I don't know what else you can say about him just coming off the bench and doing what he did last week. I've never seen a game winner like that.
That game winner was absolutely insane, and that has to be one of the coldest game winners, half because Big Baby caught him. That was hilarious. And then you got Dwayne Wade tweeting afterwards practically what I just said. It was comical. That was so perfect, and Nate Robinson is one of those players that we miss in the NBA strictly because of just how exciting he was. Remember those dunk contests? Like, that guy's got so much bounce. You know, for him to be sitting at home nowadays would be such a shame. That's why places like the Big Three are perfect, because you got a guy, like you said, maybe can't run up and down the floor for a full NBA season, but can still go out and ball. The Big Three is just straight money, if you ask me. But let's just talk the playoff picture for what now is the most exciting season of the Big Three so far. So the two clinch spots with Triplets and Power, I'm going to start with those two just to ask you if there's any of those teams that you think are the favorite to win it all right now. If there's any teams that you think are poised for a run, or if you just want to focus on those top two teams if you think that they have it in the bag. I was just curious of how you think the playoffs are going to go.
Wow. Most seasons I chalk it up. It's easy to pick, but this season it's just not the case. I mean, Power just got knocked off by Tri-State, a 2-4 team that needed to win. Power suffered from a few different injuries. They've got, obviously, Katino Mobley out and Chris Anderson out for the season. I look at them. They were great to begin the season. They were great against Triplets. They beat Triplets. That's the only loss Triplets have. I love Nancy. I love that team. I love Corey. Those are great guys, great people. Katino's great, too. That team may be in trouble depending on who makes the playoffs, just based on the matchups and the situation they've put themselves in. Julian Wright's been kind of their star, I think. Not necessarily in the box score, but just what he does for them, pretty impressive, and something that I think has been really, really underrated, not really talked about. If I was to choose a team right now, I think Triplets is probably the favorite, and then a team that could get hot. I mean, there's a few of them out there right now. I look at Trilogy. They're a team that definitely could get hot. Carlos Arroyo can shoot lights out.
Yeah.
Their new addition, Samardo Samuels, is a freak of nature. Tossed him an alley-oop last week. Not to kind of humble brag here, but he is a freak and could definitely bust down a rim or two or break some backboards. They've got a really good mix of players there. I really like what they have going. Bivouac is another team that's been really good with Will Bynum on the floor. And I think Reggie Theus has done a good job kind of managing those guys. There's a lot of teams out there, but favorites-wise, I think Triplets is probably at the top of the list right now just because they're healthy, they're moving into the playoffs at the right time, and Joe Johnson, he's really hard to guard. I don't think there's anybody in the league that can really stop him. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if it's Power and Triplets in the finals, but no one can really say at this point. And shock me one bit if Tri-State makes a run and they somehow squeak into the playoffs.
You should definitely hit us up if you are in town. Of course, I'm assuming you will be for the championship on the 1st.
I'll definitely be there.
I might hit you up for some credentials for Unwrapped. I might go represent and check it out if that's not too much to ask. We'll see if I can maybe make
absolutely.
That happen.
Absolutely. You let me know. We'll take care of you.
Perfect, man. I know we got one of our partner podcasts, Fourth Man Pod. I think he's had you on as a guest before, Oliver.
Absolutely.
Just loves the Big Three, man. That guy just is so dedicated to that league, and we're so proud to have him under our umbrella to where we know that we're putting out constant Big Three coverage. You know, having Oliver here is so fun for us to get our fix of Big Three, Corbin and I, who don't get to talk about it as much as I think we'd like to, but now that it's getting as big as it is, and we're so proud to be talking about it, and I'm ecstatic to hopefully see you on the 1st. If we can make that happen, we'll chat after the podcast on that.
We'll make it. Perfect. We'll
make
it happen.
Let's do
it. About it.
We got some topics to cover that will still relate to the Big Three, at least for the first couple ones.
You kind of brought it up with Carmelo Anthony. Look, he's trying to play one more season in the NBA. I just want to get your take, Oliver. Some people think he's being blackballed in the NBA. We saw Michael Beasley just signed with the Pistons. There were quite a few people who were upset saying if Beasley's good enough to be signed, Carmelo Anthony should definitely be signed. Do you feel like he's being blackballed in the NBA? And also, how do you think that he'll fit in the Big Three if he were to go play in the Big Three next year?
I think the first question is yes, I think he is. I wouldn't say necessarily blackballed. I don't want to put it on him necessarily, but I think part of it is just the persona that he has carried with him throughout his career. Good or bad, indifferent, whatever it may be. I just think on the outside looking in, if you look at what he's done, and I think specifically the moves he's kind of forced himself into, I think I could understand why NBA executives are afraid to potentially offer him something because right. They don't really know what his expectations are. If I was an NBA executive, though, I would be calling him first thing and trying to figure out what he really wants. Is he really looking to get the ball in his hands 6 out of 10 times and wants to be a man on a roster where he's going to play 20 minutes a night? Or is he willing to take a back seat on a championship contender and say, hey, I'll be like the 8th or 9th man. Once you have some injuries or you need some rest with guys, I'm willing to step up and play 20 minutes a night. Otherwise, put me in for 5 or 7 minutes a night. Let me be a matchup nightmare for the backups on a lot of teams. Go about it that route. Because I think what teams really want nowadays in the NBA is they want a player who's willing to fit to whatever they're looking to do. And I think with Carmelo, the unfortunate part is he hasn't necessarily been able to show or do that. But I think in Houston, he was cut really short. And that leash was not long enough for him. It should have been longer. Right. And I think the way that they did him there was pretty dirty. But him going out and going on Stephen A. Smith's show and being quite frank and honest about it, it seemed like he may have gotten bad advice on going on there and kind of speaking his part, because it really felt like, whether you agree or disagree with his points, which I think they're valid and I think I agree with most of them, the problem is that we've heard this from Carmelo's camp over and over for years. And so for him to continuously go back to, I wouldn't say excuse-making, but a cop-out in a sense, I think hurts him. It's unfortunate because I think he's an excellent player, and I think he could start on an NBA roster right now. I'm totally of the agreement that he could. I just think that he needs to prove to teams that he's willing to take a backseat and willing to do what they want him to do. And I don't know if he's necessarily willing to do that. Now, he says he is. He could be. I just don't know. As far as the Big Three goes, we're a couple seasons away before he would even consider it. And that's not to knock the Big Three. That's more because I believe in him as a player and somebody who should be in the NBA. And if I believe that, I can't imagine what he believes. He should have more confidence in himself than I.
Carmelo's one of the most confident players that we've ever watched, to be 100% honest.
Absolutely.
Confidence has never been Carmelo's issue. And that's the greatest Olympic basketball player for USA history. I'm going to bring up my point where right now, maybe he doesn't have a role in the NBA. Maybe he does. I agree with you. I think he's definitely skilled enough to be on a roster, and he could definitely start on a lower tier roster for sure that needs someone to get hot. But at least to be on a roster, absolutely. It's just the PR mess that comes along with it. And I think with his trainer coming out with those comments, he wants a farewell tour like Dwayne Wade. I think him going on First Take was more damage control. No, I don't want a farewell tour. Don't look at me like that. Don't look at me as a guy who laughed when you brought up the fact that I had to play on the bench. I am a different person now. I can take that role. It just looked a bit calculated and a bit desperate to me. And I agree with you. I'm kind of sick and tired of seeing the Hoodie Mello videos and all the comments out from his camp saying that he's bigger and better than ever. But I do believe he could play in the NBA. And I do like your point that it probably is at least, I think, 2 seasons away from consideration for the Big Three, because I agree. I do think he's got some stuff left in the tank. But wrapping back to my USA point that I made, how did he not get an invite to play on the Team USA roster? With all of these dropouts, with everyone that's decided not to play nowadays for good reason, I agree with a lot of them, focusing on the teams, especially in the West. If you need to get ready, get ready. How does he not get an invitation to the Team USA roster when he definitely can still perform? He has the Olympic resume. And I think in this position, it would have been the right move to at least keep him playing ball, to keep him representing a country that he's represented for a long time now. So regardless of how we feel about him in the Big Three or him still in the NBA or whatever that may be, I think he deserved a Team USA roster spot. And Corbin, I'm going to open this up to you, but that's just my opinion.
Yeah, I'll touch on the Team USA stuff and then him being on an NBA roster or not being on an NBA roster. But for the Team USA stuff, I understand why they didn't give him that invite, just because of the distraction that it would have caused. Look, from a talent standpoint, could he have maybe carved out a role? I think it would have been more nostalgia than the actual talent that he has now. I still think he's talented enough to be on an NBA roster, but it goes back to the distraction piece. So there's politics behind every team's decisions in the NBA. If we're just talking about the most talented players available for NBA rosters, then yeah, he's absolutely on an NBA roster. But because of all of the baggage and all of the question marks, however big of a media circus it would be with him going to any team, it's something that you definitely have to calculate into it. And when you're factoring it into playoff contenders, you don't really want that outside noise. When you're talking about teams that are going to not be making the playoffs and looking for ping pong balls, well, you want your younger players to play most of the minutes anyway. So that goes back to, is Carmelo Anthony really going to be okay with playing 8-10 minutes on a given night and then some nights not playing at all and trying to go back and forth between the two? He can say that he's okay with that, but again, and even if he says he's a completely different guy now, it was heading into last offseason when someone asked him about coming off of the bench and he laughed it off. You can't just completely forget about that. I think from a talent standpoint, yeah, Carmelo Anthony deserves to continue playing in the NBA. I'd like to see him have one final year where he knows, and we all know, this is the last year. Look, he never won a championship. That's always going to be held against him unless he joins a team that wins it this year. But even still, he didn't help lead them to the championship. That's something that's going to be held against him. He was an extremely talented player and someone who, for a 7-year period when he was on the Nuggets and the Knicks, was one of the best basketball players on the planet. I'd say top 10. I don't know if he ever approached top 5, but still a really good player and someone who you get it to him in the mid post and let him go to work, and you know that more times than not, you're going to be happy with the result. Yes, there was stuff that he needed to improve upon, but I'd like to see him have that farewell season.
I want to cut into your USA basketball topic.
Oh, please.
Absolutely, no questions asked, should have been invited and should have been on roster.
Thank you. I completely agree with you, man.
I'll explain really quick why. When you have a player who has played with USA basketball as long as he has and has given as much as he has with that uniform on, you owe it to him to give him a last chance.
Completely.
And to give him an opportunity to potentially showcase what he can do on a court so that he could potentially get picked up by an NBA team.
Absolutely.
I think NBA teams are skeptical. I think if you're the Knicks, it's the same sort of idea. He gave you 5 good seasons, 6 good seasons, whatever it was. He gave you playoffs. The last time you made the playoffs, he was there. He was making that happen. I think it's something that he would cherish whether he's playing 8 minutes a game or 30 minutes a game.
Right.
Now, USA basketball-wise, I don't know why a USA basketball wouldn't have at least given him an invite and said, hey, we want you to come in, we want you to prove yourself, we want you to try and show teams what you can do, and thank you for being a part of our team for so long and doing so much for this organization.
For holding so many records for the USA alone, and if that would have been his farewell tour, if he doesn't have a spot in the NBA anymore, and that was it, that would have been nice. I would have appreciated it. I think we all would have watched it, holding back slight tears. At least he would have had one, and now it just seems like a muddy, desperate attempt to get back in the NBA. For Carmelo Anthony, I think all three of us can agree how great of a career he's had. We hopefully will see him in the Big Three within the next few years. With a player that's coming back to the NBA right now, Vince Carter, returning back to Atlanta for a 1-year deal. Love seeing this guy still going. Such a good guy. Love seeing him still playing just for the love of the game. He's not ring chasing. That might haunt him too a little bit, that he never led a team to a championship, but that's not what he's looking for, because he easily could have went and joined the Warriors, or easily could have came and joined the Lakers or the Clippers for a small contract, but he's not doing that. He's come back to Atlanta where they did him right last year. They left open that roster spot for him, knowing they aren't going to be in playoff contention this year, wanting a guy that's going to help that locker room, help their young guys progress. So for me to see him come back to Atlanta, it's for the right reasons. So that makes me feel good. But I just want to ask you, Oliver, your opinion on him for his NBA career. But if you think he'd be a prime candidate for the Big Three, or if maybe he's maybe spent too many years in the NBA to follow up by doing this, because I know he does have some ventures in the media world. He does have a podcast and was doing some announcer stuff. So that may be what's next. I just want to ask you if you think he would be a prime candidate for the Big Three.
Absolutely a prime candidate. I wouldn't be shocked one bit if he did decide to join the Big Three in some way, shape, or form. Maybe he takes a season off and then decides, hey, I still love the game. I think that's probably the more likely scenario if it is to happen. It wouldn't shock me one bit. One important aspect about the Big Three that doesn't really get talked about enough is that these players, when they're in their primes or when they're playing in the NBA, they don't necessarily have kids that are old enough to really comprehend or understand what they were like. So they watch YouTube highlights of them, they watch clips here and there, but they don't get to actually feel the arena or see fans go crazy for their parents. I'll use Nate Robinson as an example. There's a story that'll be up on Big3.com in a few days. Nate Robinson hits that game winner. That was the first game winner his daughter ever got to see him hit. The excitement of his 8-year-old daughter was the best part of that game-winning shot. That's the fantastic part that I thought was so impressive. His daughter is freaking out. Oh my God, Daddy, made the shot. Oh my God, I couldn't believe it. Blah, blah, blah. And he's screaming. That is priceless. And that moment will live with him for the rest of his life. And as he told me, as a father, that's one of the best feelings in the world, to be able to show your kids what you were able to do. And not a lot of guys can say that they've had that opportunity. So that's something that I think is really, really vital to the Big Three and what that recruitment looks like. I mean, Scalabrini said it a few years ago. He brought his kid to the Garden, and that was the first time his kid got to see him at the Garden. That was special. Knowing that and knowing this, I mean, it wouldn't shock me one bit if he's in the Big Three. I commend him for not ring chasing. I commend him for just going his own way. I think that's different. I think that's something unique about Vince. I think we will appreciate more and more about him as a player past his NBA career.
Completely. And Corbin, I'm just going to ask you what you think about Vince Carter's NBA career.
Well, his NBA career, look, he's going into his 22nd NBA season, only player ever to play 22 years. He passes Robert Parrish, I believe Kevin Garnett, Dirk Nowitzki, who had all played 21 years.
That's Vince insane.
And just a few months ago, I think at the NBA Finals, he was dunking in a suit with dress shoes on. So for someone to be, 42 years old and still be able to do that, that's crazy to be able to do that at any age. Oliver makes a really good point and something I hadn't even thought about with players going to the Big Three afterwards, because I can just imagine if I was an NBA player and then I had kids, because you're right, Oliver, that most NBA players, by the time their kids are old enough to really understand what's going on, they're either retired or nearing the end of their career where the games aren't centered around them. So to be able to show their kids what it was like for them on a smaller scale, albeit for the Big Three, that's something that has to be huge for them, and that's a huge selling point, I would imagine. Yeah, just hearing that story about Nate Robinson with his daughter freaking out on the sideline, it's just such a cool story. It's all those little backstories, all those things that happen off the court that really just make sports special and make sports what they are.
And I think having Ice Cube there for some of these players, yeah, who is the model of taking a career in the entertainment business, if that may be sports or music, and then being a trailblazer in the business world and being an entrepreneur, I think it's similar to Magic Johnson, where he was able to recruit LeBron James here, and he will still probably be a role in LeBron's life as a guy that's giving him advice on how to transfer that NBA career to an entrepreneurial career. And regardless of what you want to say about Magic with him coming back and taking a front office role, just look at what he's done outside of sports. You know, I had Fatburger last night. I literally had Fatburger last night, and that's his shit. Having Ice Cube there is just awesome for some of these players that didn't get a chance to maybe do what they wanted to do after the NBA, and now they get another chance at hooping again, which is what they love, and can figure out what's next. One more player I just want to bring up that Corbin already kind of brought up that has a potential to be in the Big Three within the next few years as well. Michael Beasley, who just signed with the Pistons. He is quite the personality, and he's most definitely ending his career within the next few years. Screams Big Three to me for some reason. I wanted to bring up that name.
Interesting. That's an interesting name. You know, I haven't heard that tossed around very often, but certainly seems like he's the type of guy who would want to be a part of this.
Totally.
Couldn't agree with you more in terms of that. I don't know when his Big Three career would start, when that happens, but absolutely, I think he's another prime candidate. Somebody who would definitely be interested. He strikes me as the type of player who would want to do that sort of thing, maybe at some point. Definitely. There's a lot of names out there, not just the three that you mentioned. Derek Williams, I've heard you do like Jamal Crawford, a bunch of other guys. Michael Beasley, definitely. I haven't heard that name. That's a new one for me, so certainly one that I would keep an eye on as well.
Interesting. Definitely. It seems like the personality that would just fit like a glove.
Yeah, Beasley, Jamal Crawford. Big Three is made for someone like Jamal Crawford.
Oh, they would be blessed to have Jamal Crawford.
Yeah. Let's move on to some stuff going on in the NCAA to the NBA. So the Rich Paul rule, as it was famously dubbed, the NCAA last week came out with a rule requiring any agent that was going to be representing an undergraduate who was going pro to have NBPA certification of at least 3 consecutive years, professional liability insurance, and completion of an in-person exam taken at the NCAA office in Indianapolis, and have at least a bachelor's degree. That last part, what Rich Paul, who's the agent for LeBron James, Ben Simmons, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, among others, he does not have a bachelor's degree, but still he is one of the most successful agents in the NBA. He's helped LeBron James and other players form outside business interests as well. The NCAA, it seemed like they were trying to prevent him from representing their players if they came out early, specifically because Rich Paul helped kind of circumvent the system with getting Darius Bazley an internship, quote unquote.
New Balance, right?
Yeah, where he basically got $1 million not to go to college, which definitely rubbed some people in the NCAA the wrong way. So the NCAA had that rule for about a week, and then just recently, within the past few days, they backtracked on the bachelor's degree portion of it, where you don't have to have a bachelor's degree as long as you're in good standing with the NBPA and are NBPA certified, which is the National Basketball Players Association. Then you're fine to represent people, which, look, I mean, that was the right thing to do, obviously. I think.
Yeah, that's so screwed up. And to be honest, how obvious can you be? You saw LeBron James's tweet, if you're on Twitter. You saw the Stay Woke, and it had all those pictures of different quotes and things about Rich Paul, to be particular. And then the rule that just came out. And this shows how powerful of a person LeBron James and some of these other players are.
Yeah, and the bachelor's degree part of it. So I get the other requirements with needing to be certified by the NBPA. But look, if you're an agent who's been certified by the NBPA, Rich Paul, and just take any other agent as an example. If some other agent has a bachelor's degree from some random school in art or something, is that really helping him with his relationships with his players and being able to do what's best for the players? No, absolutely not. Any bachelor's degree is part of the requirement? No, it never made any sense. The NCAA had to know the blowback on this was going to be huge. They never should have been doing it in the first place.
It's a bad look.
Yeah, I'm glad to see that it didn't last for too long. If the NCAA had kept this rule, this was going to be set up for Rich Paul to sue them on an antitrust lawsuit.
I can see that. It's just screwed up.
Yeah.
Why would you want to prevent some of these top name players coming out to have a top name agent? That just doesn't make sense to me. But Oliver, we're going to ask you your opinion on the Rich Paul rule and everything that's gone on with the NCAA.
I think it's bad, obviously. The fact that they didn't think about this before they did it is just crazy to me. I cannot believe this got approved. And it baffles my mind, and then it doesn't, because it's the NCAA. If you're the best candidate for a role and you don't have a bachelor's degree, that's going to perturb a company or an institution or an organization from saying, no, you can't get that role. Look, I love college. It's a great tool for many people, and I think it's a very, very good use of your time. I'm not bashing the college system. I'm not bashing bachelor's degrees, master's degrees, anything of the sort. But what I am saying is excluding people that don't necessarily have one for specific jobs or roles. Us as a society really need to look at ourselves and wonder, are we hiring the best candidates, or are we just hiring the most quote-unquote qualified based on what they have on a resume? Because I do think there's two different things to it. I don't know if it necessarily equates to success. Now, dollars and cents, probably, and all the numbers and mathematics probably equal. Having a bachelor's degree makes you more money, makes you more successful, but as we've seen in history, there are many people without degrees that have successful, incredible careers and life. That's just my personal opinion on the whole topic.
Totally. College was a great experience, you know, but not everyone needs it. And if the job that you're already doing doesn't require you to have one, for them to be like, oh, the most successful guy doesn't have one, let's make this more fair for everyone else in the most blatant way possible. I just think it was such a dumb rule. Why don't you start working on paying your players? Like, why don't we figure out a way to legally pay the people that are bringing millions of dollars to each one of your schools? Like, let's figure that out so we don't have to have this sketchy shit. People are paying people under the table. Rich Paul is maneuvering Darius Bazley into different loopholes until he finds a way to make money.
That's the thing that's so ridiculous, though, about all of this, is that the NCAA doesn't pay their players any money at all. All of the different executives in the NCAA make millions, billions of dollars off of athletes that they're really just exploiting. And then Rich Paul goes and takes one of what would have been probably the better athletes in college basketball last year and figures out a way to make money for that athlete instead of for the NCAA, and the NCAA tries to fire back.
They go berserk. Yeah, that's called triggered at its finest for the NCAA. We're going to move on to the NBA pulling a fantastic move here. They're requiring every team to have a licensed mental health professional on retainer for the entire season. This is a lot to do with Kevin Love speaking up the way that he did last year. So many other players that took their stance on mental health in 2019, 2020 were at a point in time where we can accept the fact that we all have some issues, some more than others, but there's people that no matter how successful, how athletic, how their careers have gone, they have demons. And to go through a whole NBA season is a mental grind. You are away from family, away from loved ones. Some players are bound to have some problems. To have someone that's going to be traveling with the team, be there through some of these guys' struggles that we're not able to see from the media, it's really amazing and shows what a progressive league that the NBA is. The NFL would never do this. And if they do, it's going to be because the NBA did it and they're getting so much backlash for not having it. No way that another league would be this progressive. You know, the Big Three, of course, is their own trailblazer. They're coming up with different rules and ways of doing things. But at the end of the day, I'm still going to leave them in the basketball umbrella. And right now for professional sports, they are the most progressive league. The NBA has been around for so long, and Adam Silver continues to put out more and more things, willing to listen to their people, willing to make the moves that are going to get some backlash, but at the end of the day is the right thing to do. So Mr. Silver and the NBA, I am giving you a round of applause for everything that you've done. I have struggled with issues of my own in the past. To have someone to talk to, it's not anything to be ashamed of. Speaking to a licensed professional is, I think, something that every person should do in their life at some point, because everyone struggles with something. And to have someone that has no bias towards you and just listens to what's going on and give you professional advice, fantastic. These professional athletes, you deserve this.
Most importantly out of all of this is that by having someone on the staff at all times that's going to be retained year round, it's just going to allow players that are maybe in denial about having something going on mentally, some demon that they're dealing with, or just something on their mind, to have that outlet right there instead of having to actively go out and seek help. I think that that's going to go a long way towards continuing to better the environment for all NBA players.
Oliver, do you have any opinion on this?
Totally with you guys. I do want to give a quick shout out to Royce White, who's in the Big Three, and really, I think, paved the way for the NBA to start doing this. He took his own hits, I guess, sacrificed his career in a sense, and was very outspoken about mental health and the crisis that he went through and some of the things that he went through, specifically with flying, fear of flying, a lot of things. To set the record straight, it wasn't that he couldn't fly, it's just that he chose not to when it was a short trip that he could drive to. So I think, obviously, the NBA is trending in the right direction. They're doing the things that need to take place. I really, really, really hope that it's not just poster board, that it is something that they stand behind and really get behind and will actually utilize, and we can hear some of these experiences and stories, because I think it's important to broadcast that out and make sure people know about it. I'm glad that people are recognizing mental health as a greater societal issue and something that everyone faces. I think that's the most important portion, is to have this conversation every day in any way, shape, or form throughout any sort of substance, whether it's sports, music, entertainment, whatever it may be. But being able to open up about this stuff and have people talk about it, converse about it, I think it's vital to the success of sports. I think it's vital to the success of human nature moving forward. We can put it in one big umbrella, but there are many different forms of mental health. And I think, and I hope, that people will start to research and understand their bodies and specifically the mental side.
Completely. And we're going to move on to the NBA releasing their schedules. We're not going to dive into particular games today. We'll talk about that on a future podcast if there's anything that we have coming up that really stands out to us. But for me, I just wanted to bring up the Indiana Pacers putting out the schedule the way they did on social media, and the Jazz, they had a really cute Lego inspired video of releasing their schedule, but the Pacers just took this to another level. They did a whole Netflix thing, and you know how the Netflix thing comes up in red and the letters show up. It was the same thing, but with Pacers. They logged into their account and it was different players, and they clicked on the account and it showed different listings on Netflix, like you would see when it shows you that little 30-second preview while you're scrolling through, and it said the planet, and it had different animals. So when they had their series with the Hawks, it would show the Hawk and be like Atlanta Hawks. And then it would show the Pelican and be like the Pelicans. Then they moved on to the next show. It was like the Crown, and it would show their games against the Lakers, the Celtics, and the Bulls. And they moved on to the Defenders, and it was the Raptors, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Golden State Warriors and their series. Tropic Thunder was the Thunder, and it was absolutely really genius, very creative. To see PR teams like that, it makes my marketing boner just go off. Whoever thought about that deserves a raise. Absolutely. And you should come on the podcast, tell me how you came up with that idea, because that was really, really funny. I had a great time watching that. The schedule's out. I'm sure a lot of you guys have seen it. Some big games coming up that we're very excited to watch this season. Of course, with opening day.
Opening night's going to be very fun. I just want to congratulate the NBA for getting opening night right. I forgot what the matchup was last year, but I know the Lakers didn't play until 2 days after the season started when LeBron James was coming to town. But usually in the NBA, whatever teams play each other on Christmas never play before that. They want that being the first marquee matchup between the two teams. And the Lakers and Clippers play on Christmas. So when I saw that, I thought, okay, like, I was happy with that. I was happy with that being the Christmas Day matchup, but I also thought, I knew in the back of my head, they're not playing before that, so they're not playing on opening night, but I was wrong. They're playing opening night. The Raptors, the defending champions, have to play on opening night, get their rings, and we're going to get to see Zion Williamson play in his first game on opening night, so it's going to be two really fun games, and I just think the NBA did a really good job of setting up opening night to set the stage for the whole season.
Right, so speaking about Zion, we were in Vegas for Summer League, got to see his what was it, 10 or 11 minutes of play before he got taken out for that injury. Some of the most intimidating basketball we've ever watched. That guy, of course, was playing tryout players.
Kevin Knox into a ragdoll.
Yeah, it was pathetic to see some of these guys even try and play basketball with Zion Williamson. So to see him actually playing against NBA players, I'm very excited to see the hype around the Pelicans in general, because they have a very, very good young core and a team that I said was going to make the 8 seed this year. So that was my dark horse prediction of the year. Because David Griffin, of course, is a wizard. So I'm excited to see what they're able to do. The Lakers-Clippers are going to be the most entertaining thing in Los Angeles, except for the Big 3 championship on September 1st at Staples. But after that, we're going to have the Lakers and Clippers just running this town and making this season absolutely absurd. We wanted to bring up something interesting to end the podcast. All-decade teams that got released, I think it was last week. Did you get a chance to see those, Oliver, the ones that were separated, the all-decade?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So okay, Corbin's cool. Got them all in front of us. We were going to kind of just briefly go through how they were set up, and if we disagree or agree.
All-decade first team, LeBron, obviously, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, James Harden, and Kawhi Leonard. I'll go through all three, and then we can discuss. So all-NBA decade second team, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, Carmelo Anthony, Blake Griffin, and Anthony Davis. Third team, Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant, Paul George, Giannis, and LaMarcus Aldridge. Let's start at the top with the all-decade first team. Do you think the NBA got it right? Again, it's LeBron, KD, Steph Curry, James Harden, Kawhi Leonard.
I'm okay except for James Harden. I don't believe he belongs on the all-decade team, but
really,
the other four have the championships.
I am totally for that team. I think they did a pretty good job with that. Quite the opposite, I think James Harden absolutely deserves to be on that list, not because of his playoff record, but because of where he stood in the MVP conversation year after year for the past, what is it, 4 years now that he's been runner-up, winner, runner-up, third place. I think he's had like six top five finishes in the MVP voting now. It seems like it's been a pretty consistent streak of being at the upper echelon of the league. Yeah, I would definitely put him in that category with those guys.
So if I had to pick a replacement from the second team to swap, at me, by the way, Russell Westbrook coming in, because I'm going to look at James Harden with the seven All-Stars, the six NBA teams, and I'm going to look at Russell Westbrook with eight All-Stars, eight All-NBA teams, has the MVP, has been in discussion.
And he's also averaged a triple-double.
Right, as an individual player, not including team success, I would definitely give that to Russell Westbrook over James Harden. But I definitely see your point, because he's been right there in MVP discussion every single year. And the only other player that has less All-Stars and All-NBAs on the first team is Kawhi, and you can't not give it to him. That guy's won a championship in both conferences, two finals MVPs, Kawhi Leonard. There's no way that you can't keep him on there, but he does have less personal accolades than the rest.
I think your argument about James Harden and Russell Westbrook, it's a close one. I wouldn't have an issue with either one of them being on the first team. Westbrook being able to average a triple-double in three straight seasons. I don't think that we appreciate that enough.
That's we don't at
unbelievable,
all.
And we kind of take it for granted now. Yeah, I'd agree with these five being the top five. If you have to put a big man in, then you probably take Kawhi off, and I guess you'd put Anthony Davis on, but I just don't think he was dominant enough to warrant an All-NBA first team. He also wasn't drafted into the league until 2011 draft, but Kawhi Leonard, I think we're a little bit prisoners of the moment with him. Arguably the best player in the NBA right now, but let's not forget that a year ago right now, he had a ton of questions about himself. He was not this dominant of an NBA player. Even the last time that he had a full healthy season before this year, he was a very good player, but he wasn't someone that you said, yeah, if I can build a team around anyone, I want it around him. So a little bit prisoner of the moment with that, but even with that, yeah, he probably deserves to be on the All-NBA first team. Let's move to the All-Decade second team. Again, Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, Anthony Davis, Blake Griffin, Carmelo Anthony. Personally, I think that Chris Paul, Russell Westbrook, and Anthony Davis, they all definitely deserve to be on there. Chris Paul, again, being prisoners of the moment, Paul is not the same player that he used to be, but over the course of this entire decade,
right,
the first half of this decade, Chris Paul was clearly the best point guard in the NBA. Yeah.
Point God is his nickname.
And he had a string of 4 or 5 years where he just had an incredible run. Westbrook, again, with the triple-doubles in three straight years.
Absolutely.
Anthony Davis, he was always a good player when he got to the NBA, but especially over these last few years, he's taken his game to a completely new level. Blake Griffin, I think, again, just kind of forgetting how great he was when he first came into the league. He's transformed himself into a completely different player now.
Shooting threes.
Yeah, he still can be a high flyer, but where in the beginning of his career, that was what he relied on to get him points. Now he can do that, but he also has so much more to his game than just that. Carmelo Anthony is the one that I've heard the most criticism about that, and people wanting to take Carmelo Anthony off and put either Kobe Bryant or Dwayne Wade or Paul George on it. I think Carmelo Anthony deserves to be on the second team All-Decade. Again, it's just people forgetting this is an All-Decade team, not all 2017 to 2019 team. Carmelo Anthony, over the course of the decade, averaged just under 24 points per game at 23.9, 6.8 rebounds per game, and just under 3 assists a game. He was also an 8-time All-Star in the decade. He had a great run with the Nuggets and the Knicks this decade, and I think he deserves to be on there. So, again, I don't have any issues with this All-Decade second team. Oliver, what are your thoughts on it?
It's tough. I'm with you on the Carmelo Anthony thing. Okay. I think I put him in there. He was, to me, a top-five player. One of the Knicks seasons, I think it was when they made the playoffs, I really thought that he was a top-five player and should have been regarded higher than what people were putting him at. And All-Star appearances, I don't really take too much into account in terms of All-Star appearances just because it is kind of a popularity contest and it's been moved back and forth as to like who votes and what wins. So the All-Star stuff, try and not think about because I think that that really can provide some bias to a lot of people's opinions on what is and what isn't a good player. But even without those All-Star appearances in that discussion, I think Carmelo certainly deserves to be in the discussion. And the only other guy I think about, Dwayne Wade, the early part of the 2010 season, he like reinvented himself and is one of the first players that I can remember I thought was way past his prime and then showed us season after season that he could still do things. He could still be a productive player and still get Miami to the playoffs each and every year. So, especially with LeBron's run in Miami, putting that into account with it and Dwayne Wade being that second fiddle there, and ultimately, I think, first star there for a little while, at least at the beginning, I definitely would put Wade, if I was to replace Carmelo, I would put Wade in there.
Would you put Wade above Carmelo, though, or would you keep it how it is?
Yeah, it's tough to say, because then you put Carmelo in those 2010 runs on that Miami Heat team. Do they do anything differently? Do they still win championships? And I think the answer is probably yes, but maybe Wade, I don't know, yeah. Competitively, I think that's a good point. Wade may have an edge. So.
Yeah, but for me, it's Wade over Melo, and I'm not forgetting how great Melo was, but more highlighting how amazing Wade was.
Especially early.
Yeah, especially early, man.
I think if you expanded the careers the entire decade. I think Wade has a bigger body of work. Probably say I'd replace them.
I'm not upset if you see LaMarcus Aldridge over Anthony Davis either, because I'm not a prisoner of the moment forgetting how great LaMarcus Aldridge was. He's a Tim Duncan type of player. Like, the production's there and he's so silent and doesn't cause waves. Yeah. So, and we're forgetting that he had one of his best years of his career last year. So he's still going. I understand that it's not the 2019 team, but this guy was a staple of consistency for the entire decade. So for Anthony Davis, I could see the argument for both. I'm just saying, if you did swap those, I wouldn't be upset.
He was. I think Aldridge, yes, he was the model of consistency for this whole decade, but he never reached the heights that Anthony Davis did. And Anthony Davis was good enough for long enough for the majority of this decade to where I would still say that tiebreaker goes to Anthony Davis because of how dominant he eventually became in this decade. I get your point with that, though, Perry.
Definitely.
Look, that third team, though, so it has Kobe, Dwayne Wade, LaMarcus Aldridge, Paul George, Giannis. If Giannis doesn't win MVP, even if he had as good of a season as he did last year,
he's not on
this list. Think he's on this list, just because it's really been these last 2 years where he has been an absolute superstar in this league. I think he was an all-star the year before, which, again, Oliver, like you said, the all-stars don't matter completely. But look, if Giannis isn't an MVP, he wasn't good enough for long enough to be included in this. And I think someone who you could say probably got snubbed was Dwight Howard. I think the three biggest names that people bring up are Dwight Howard, Kevin Garnett, and Dirk Nowitzki. Garnett and Nowitzki I don't have as big of an issue with, because even though Nowitzki, for instance, played this entire decade, the last 4 years, he wasn't nearly as good of a player as he used to be. And then Kevin Garnett retired a few years ago. Kobe Bryant, look, I'm a biggest Lakers fan you'll find and a huge Kobe fan. If he wasn't on the third team, all-decade team, I wouldn't have a huge issue with that. I just think, look, he retired in 2016. He won a championship in 2010 and was great until he ruptured his Achilles in 2013. But that's 40% of this decade.
Right.
For 3 years after that, he was an incredibly inefficient player who took up a ton of shots, made his team, you could argue, a worse team when he was on the court than off the court.
Carmelo Anthony.
And then for 4 years to end the decade, he didn't even play. I'm not saying that he shouldn't be on the team, but if someone wanted to make a case he shouldn't be on the team, I wouldn't argue too heavily about that. Which sounds weird because of how great Kobe is, but it is an all-decade
team. It's an all-decade team. So there's layers to this, but end of the day, third team beats second team. So thank you so much for listening to episode 57 of NBA Unwrapped. It was such a fun episode today with Oliver. Again, I want to sign you off. OMaroneyNBA on Twitter, and I'm so excited to chat with you after this, just about meeting up on the first and being there to represent Unwrapped Sports at the Championship for Big Three. We would be honored to do that. I want to remind you guys to listen to our podcast on Anchor, the Apple Podcast app, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Breaker, Pocket Cast, and Radio Public. And thank you so much to our sponsors for this episode at Yamble Sports and Sportscaster live streaming app, Yamble Sports, a live predictions app. Both of them so fun to be doing work with. So wanted to thank them and make sure you guys are downloading their apps at Yamble and Sportscaster. Make sure to follow us on Twitter at NBA Unwrapped. You can follow me on Twitter at Perry Aston, Corbin on Twitter at Corbin Unwrapped, and our network account at Unwrapped Sports, our website at unwrappedsports.com, and again, our guest Oliver Maroney at OMaroneyNBA. Oliver, thank you so much for joining us. It was such a pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Of course. So we'll chat a little bit later, Oliver, about all the details with that. I'm excited to bring him on a future show to chat again. It was such a pleasure.
Yeah.
And to speak with you, Corbin, of course, having us here talking about NBA. It's our bread and butter. So our favorite thing to do, even with NBA in its darker phase right now, we have football, fantasy football coming up. Follow our FFB Unwrapped page.
Sports are starting to get a lot more fun.
We're getting back, guys. So
We have baseball to get us through summer, which, look, it's better than nothing, but let's be honest, when football comes back, and especially basketball, I'm so much happier.
But we got Big Three playoffs coming up, so you guys need to be paying attention to that. We're blessed to at least be having basketball going on right now that we all love to watch. Oliver, again, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you all so much for listening.